Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, November 3rd, 2016. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, Gard Karlsnes from the Bryggerhuset Pilot Brewery of Os Brewing Company in Norway joins us for part one of a two-part discussion. Gard brews experimental beers for his traditionally Rheinheitsgebot-centered parent brewery. Steve Wilkes will help me sample some of those beers. If you're new to home brewing and would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. And if you buy any of our DVD combos, you get a free Basic Brewing bottle opener. And don't forget to get a copy of our Brewer's Logbook. You can use it to log and track up to 50 batches of beer. You can follow me on Twitter. My username is Basic Brewing, all one word. We have a Basic Brewing Radio and Basic Brewing Video page on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing. And thanks to everybody who's been clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. You know how it works. Whenever you think of Amazon shopping, think of us first and click on our associate ad on basicbrewing.com. It won't cost you any extra, and you'll be helping us to bring you the show, and we greatly appreciate your support. We also have associate links for Your Own Magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site as well. You can find our Basic Brewing iPhone app on iTunes, our Android app on Amazon.com. We have a Windows phone app. We're on the BlackBerry podcast directory, and we're on the Stitcher app as well. We're on Google Play Music and iHeartRadio, the iHeartRadio app as well. If you want to put a tip in our tip jar, some coinage in our virtual guitar case, you can go to basicbrewing.com/support, and thanks to everybody who's done so already. I have a personal homebrew success story to share. I provided a bunch of homebrew for a Halloween gathering this past weekend. I provided a keg of cream ale, several bottles, which included a 15-minute pale ale, sinister milk stout from High Gravity, a couple or three blackberry pilsners, and the three tart beers that you may have seen on this year's Halloween episode of Basic Brewing Video that I posted on Monday. Check that out if you haven't seen it. Fun stuff there. Well, I'm happy to report that the homebrew was popular, especially the cream ale. The full keg was almost empty at the end of the evening, so good news and bad news there. Bad news, not much for me to drink after the party. The pale ale and the milk stouts were also heavily favored, and people seemed a little skeptical of the tart beers. Not too many sour fans around here in Northwest Arkansas yet, but we will convince them eventually. But, man, it was fun to share my homebrew with appreciative friends. And speaking of our latest episode of Basic Brewing Video, Steve and I tasted my latest round of kettle-soured 100% rye session beers that I've been talking about here on this show. If you don't recall, this time I split the batch and flavored one part with canned sour cherries and another part with mango and peach chunks and left some of the bottles plain. We liked all three, but our favorite was the plain version. We found that the fruit dulled the tartness a bit and that there was more tropical fruit flavor in the plain version than the one with the mangoes added. So there you go. Mike on YouTube commented, I've done a few kettle sours and have found that Lactobacillus plantarum does tend to give off a great pineapple citrus type of character on its own. I've also found that fruit can mute the perceived acidity. So there you go. This kind of backs up what Steve and I were tasting on the podcast or on the video. Appreciate that feedback, Mike. In the future, I think I'll just stick to the plain. Easier to do. We preferred it. Although the peaches did add some nice flavor, so I think I'll add peaches in that way to some other beers or maybe some meads in the future. I used the Good Belly Mango Shot probiotic to provide the lactobacillus. It seemed to do fairly well at room temperature, but it worked more slowly than I expected. And I keep wondering if the low gravity of the beer has something to do with that. I've sent some samples of those brews to Mike Tonsmeyer, the mad fermentationist, so I hope to get together with him soon and talk about them and maybe get some tips and some feedback on those brews. Now a word from our sponsors, Desiree and Dave of High Gravity in Tulsa. They say it's Brewvember, the start of the brewing season, and they advise it's time to look over your brewing equipment and see what needs to be replaced or upgraded. And they're going to help you do that with a sale on gear. Now through Saturday, November 5th, you can take 20% off your purchase of fermenting and bottling equipment on highgravitybrew.com. This includes the categories of beer and wine bottling and racking equipment and beer and wine fermenting equipment as well. 20% off through the website. That's a good deal. The discount will automatically be applied at checkout, so you don't have to remember any kind of code or anything like that. So check that out. All the details on upgrading your fermenting and bottling gear are at highgravitybrew.com. 20% off of that equipment at highgravitybrew.com. We rarely have two-parters nowadays, but I think this interview warrants it. Gard was kind enough to send five beers via his wife, who traveled to New York from Norway, and I wanted to take the time to discuss details and get some tips on brewing each of them without hurrying through them. Oss, spelled A-A-S-S, is the oldest active brewery in Norway, but they're looking in new directions by operating the Bryggerhuset pilot brewery with Gard Karlsnes at the helm. And here's part one of our chat. Well, Gard Karlsnes, welcome to Basic Brewing Radio.
Thank you, James. Thank you for having me.
Did I get close?
Yeah, much better than some other efforts I've heard before. Excellent.
Well, I'll stick with Gard. I think I can say Gard.
Yeah, that should be doable.
Well, this is wonderful to talk to you, and thank you very, very much for sending the beers, and thank your wife because she helped in the coordination of sending the beers as well. Steve and I had a great time tasting them, and we'll hear that in a few minutes. But I want to get some background on you first of all. How long have you been brewing, and what's your course been in your brewing career?
I started home brewing when I turned 30, which is 4 years ago, and brewed quite a lot at home. My wife would probably say that I brewed very much at home, like almost every weekend it felt like. Before that, I drunk and sampled lots of different beers. And really grown more interested in reading. And my professional background is a teacher, so I've worked for 10 years in a middle school in Norway, and found out that I really wanted to work with beers, and preferably brewing. So when the position as the manager of the new pilot brewery at Oss Bryggeri turned up, and I got that one. That was really a dream job, and I started in August, and since then I've brewed roughly 80 batches on the pilot system.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that seems like a lot. Talk about your parent brewery, and then talk about your system as well.
Yeah. So Oss Brewery is Norway's oldest brewery still in function. So we were founded in 1834, and we were founded by Paul Lauritz Oss, and we are still a family-owned brewery in the fifth generation now. And we're around 100 employees, and in the top five of breweries in Norway in volume. So we have a long and rich heritage. And especially the Bock I sent you is like one of our flagship products.
Yeah, it was a tasty beer, and we'll get into that. Describe your position and your system. What is your role, and what kind of tools have they given you in the brewery?
The main tool is my pilot system. So I brew on a 10 hectoliter system, and my role is really just to experiment. That's the main thing, to develop new beer styles and brew new beers and try out different ingredients and recipes and techniques. So we've done over these 80 batches, we've done lots of fairly untraditional stuff for our brewery. We are mainly a lager brewery, since the 1860s, we've only brewed or mainly brewed lager beers in the main brewery. So there we follow the Reinheitsgebot, and I don't at all. not by principle, but there are so many other fun stuff to put in the beer as well. So to play around with that, it's one of my, I like that.
So for those of us who are not metrically inclined, do you know the size of your brewery in barrels?
Oh, what is that? Around 12 to 13 barrels, I think.
Okay. So that's so you're essentially playing with a really big homebrew system, or at least in the philosophy of your job, meaning that you still get to play with ingredients, and you still get to play with recipes and have fun, but on a much larger scale.
Yeah, you can basically say that I get to homebrew, but I get paid for it. it's really. It's a two vessel system, so it's a very basic setup, really. Combined mash and loader tun, and combined wort kettle and whirlpool, and fermenters and lagering tanks. So it's the first times it was kind of daunting, because there are like valves and pumps and stuff that I wasn't used to, as with my very manual setup I use at home. But got the swing with, and it's fairly straightforward. It's not much different than brewing 50-liter batches on your stovetop, which I did.
Hmm. So, are you given complete freedom, or do you have to pass your ideas in front of a supervisor or something, or how does that work?
No, Brett.
No,
Brett. But that's mainly the only precaution we take. Otherwise, I get to play around with stuff as long as I keep doing my job well. So far, it's been going really well. So in the pilot brew, we mainly brew for kegging. So we deliver beers in key kegs. The beers that are produced there, and if we see that we need to scale up something, we will brew it in our medium system, which is around 200 barrels, I think, and that's our small system. but at the moment, or since 1978, that's our main brew house, and we're just in the process of dialing in the newest brew house, which has a 600 hectoliter capacity. So I was actually sitting in on the brew there today. That's a different kettle of fish entirely,
so to speak.
Yeah, it was not a fish beer. Well, it would have been fun, of course. So no, I have. The freedom to do so far, I haven't been denied anything, and the wild yeast stuff, that's just too scary unless you have a separate building with a perpetual flame around it or something. I think just too risky.
Sure.
Although, yeah.
Sure. When the brewery has a long reputation of brewing, you know, clean, mostly lager beers, you know, getting some Brettanomyces in a batch may not be good for the reputation.
No, you don't want to be that guy that turned Allsbury from making lagers into making sour beer. That wouldn't be good for any of us.
Well, you generously sent us five beers, so we've got a lot of tasting to do. So why don't we start with the Bock, the Os Bock.
Os, yeah.
And talk briefly about this recipe. What makes this beer?
It's a dark malt, so we use mainly malts from Finland, Sweden, and Denmark. So it's a Bayer malt base, and there is some color malts as well. And you mentioned in your tasting that you were wondering about the decoction, and all our dark beers are double decocted.
Ah.
Yeah, so you were spot on there. And German hops, and it's a beer on the sweeter side, like the malty, full, rich, sweetish beer. And it pairs excellently with dessert. And in Norway, like when breweries were celebrating something earlier, you were served sponge cake and bock beer. That's a really celebratory meal. And it also pairs excellent with like hearty meat dishes and cheese. It's a better companion to cheese than most red wines I've tasted.
Well, there you go. Let's go into the tasting and see what Steve and I thought. With Steve Wilkes, thanks for joining me again in the studio.
You're welcome, James. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, I think it's going to get more pleasurable as we go along. This is an honor. I consider anytime anybody takes the time and effort and resources to send us beer, I am very honored when people do that. And this is especially a privilege because who knows when we'll be going to Norway, but here we are sampling some fine beers from there. Okay, so we're starting with, and Gard has given me some guidelines. I'm going to say Os Bock. And it is really, really good. I'll start since you're rolling up your sleeves. You're really getting into this.
I've got a lot of drinking to do.
It's a Bock, so one would expect it to be very malty.
And it is, and it's a little spicy too. I got a little, it's very malt forward, not about the hops. Oh, it's a bock. And I understand that it's one of the examples from the BJCP guidelines. So there you go.
Yeah, it's got a lot of I would say dark character, dark malt character. It is I wouldn't say descriptors like brown sugar and molasses and things like that come into my mind, although those characteristics are subtle, I would say. This isn't a sweet beer. It's nicely balanced with the bitterness from hops. I don't get a lot of hop character. One wouldn't expect to get a lot of hop
Right.
character, but it's very easy drinking. This is a beer that I would love to have a pint. Would you pair this with food?
I'd pair linoleum with food. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't even know where to start. I mean, this would be great with dessert. It'd be great with barbecue. It'd be great with a steak, kind of about anything that's beefsteak for all you folks out there. I don't tend to drink many Bock beers because they are typically kind of gloppy to me, to my palate. This one is not. It's very clean and dare I say it, sessionable. So it's a great beer.
Yeah, I'm wondering if it's decocted, because with the decoction mash, you're allegedly supposed to be getting, some of the melanoidins or whatever the is the characteristics that you're getting, and that, I'm getting some kind of a it's complex. There's a
Yeah.
lot going on in there. It's not
Yeah.
something that it tastes like there's a lot of work that has gone into this beer.
Yeah, and again, it's the balance is very nice. It's not like an ESB, which of course is a British beer, but it kind of has that. It's just almost light enough to be a super premium bitter. I'm kind of scratching at it here, but it reminds me a little bit of Bass Ale if Bass Ale were a little bit bigger and a little more burnt sugary kind of thing going.
And maybe a little less hoppy.
Yeah, and a little less hoppy. Yeah, for sure.
Very nice. So there you go. I feel proud of myself. I picked out the decoction characteristics.
Yeah, excellent. Good job.
Now I enjoyed the Bock. It's actually one of my favorite Bocks that I've ever had. I mean, there's something to a Bock that I think Steve referred to that they're kind of gloppy or kind of there's too much of a good thing,
Yeah, they can easily be that.
But this one is very, very nice, very drinkable, and you get those kind of melanoidin characteristics, but it doesn't go overboard. It's just nicely balanced and very very tasty and drinkable. So I don't need to tell you it's a good beer.
No, it's one of my favorite beers. Definitely like a go-to beer for my liking as well. And it's a beer we're proud of because it's still brewed with the same recipe for over 100 years. We're not actually sure how old the recipe we're using is, because when you get to be our age as a company, it's kind of difficult because records weren't always kept as well as they are now. And we did all our malting ourselves until the 1970s. So like really old recipes, we only just say malt, best variety, best hops. And that's what we have to go on for the really old ones.
But you would hope that that because there is a succession of brewmasters who know what they're doing and want the beer to be consistent over time, you would think that the beer must at least be a very close cousin to the original beer.
Yeah, and our Bock, we're quite sure it is. But it's more like I'm very curious about what we did before we started lager brewing. That's difficult to find out because there were like 20 years before we started brewing lagers, where we were still brewing, but no one's quite sure what we made then. And that's the difficult part. But our Bock is probably stayed the same since it was released.
Wow. Well, very nice. Now we head into the rest of these are going to be your beers, correct?
Yeah.
So we tried to go from on a scale of you know, leaving the more strongly flavored beers toward the end. So the next one that we had was the Bryggerhuset Session Hefeweiss beer.
Yeah, excellent.
Was I close?
Yeah, you were. And I wouldn't mention the R's.
It's as good as my Arkansas raised tongue can get, probably. But so talk about this beer.
So this is kind of one of my babies. It's based upon the recipe that I won the National Homebrew Championship in the wheat beer category in 2014.
Nice.
It's the same ingredients mainly, and just scaled up quite a lot. And I prefer my Hefeweiss beers with lots of banana and little clove. So much so that I've added bananas to the mash, which work excellently, by the way. They just disappear. All the starch and sugars are converted, and doesn't create a stuck mash that you would be afraid of. It just disintegrates. So lots of bananas.
So a couple of questions about the bananas and the mash.
Yeah.
How do you treat them? I mean, one would think that the riper the banana, the better.
Yeah, but not black, but like good and yellow.
Okay.
You would just peel them. Don't have the peel inside. I don't think that would work. when I did my pilot batches in the pilot system, I just peeled them myself and squashed them by hand, because that's the easiest with gloved hands. And when we did the scaled-up brew, we had a farm that packs fruit that to peel and cut them up machinally, because it would have taken ages.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
And what percentage by weight, or, you know, how do you figure out how many bananas to put in the mash?
I just scaled up from what I was used to using. So it's somewhere between 2 and 5%.
Okay.
Yeah.
And do you get a lot of sugar from the bananas?
By calculation, it seems like all the starch that is in bananas are converted by the enzymes.
Okay.
And sugars as well. So I can't remember the numbers off the top of my head, but if you like, look up nutritional value for bananas, you can just assume that all those starches and sugars will be converted to sugars.
And what's your mash schedule like? Is it a multiple temperature mash?
It's a decoction. Be in a Hefeweizen beer. So it's a protein rest and one decoction up to the sacrification rest, which is a bit on the high side to make sure there's some residual sweetness, and then up to mash out.
So you do the decoction with the bananas already added?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Easiest way to do it in our system, so because that's the one where we have the easiest access to adding extra stuff, which we don't, we're not really used to doing that before I came along. Which we'll get back to that when we talk about the Christmas beer.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, spoiler alert.
Yeah. And we used German hops all the way. So just a little bit of Warrior for bittering. I like that in most of my beers. For the main bittering, I use Warrior because it gives a clean taste and lots of bang for the buck and a little Trub. And we used both Tettnang and Mittelfrü and Hill Melon and Mandarina Bavaria because I like both of those German experimental hops. I think that it's fun that Germany is doing some fun stuff with hops as well, apart from the traditional lager varieties.
And talk about your yeast and your fermentation schedule. You say you don't like the clovey character.
No.
So how do you manage that to where you get a balance of flavors?
It's basically just stock up on things that will give banana flavor in the mash, like the bananas. And then we start at 18 and we let it free rise, not too wildly, but around 20, 21.
Okay.
And it's given good results. I'm not really sure of the mechanisms between the clove and banana balance, because there are contradictory evidence in all things I've read about it. So it seems to work for us. And the bananas probably help as well with the flavor of ripe bananas.
So around 70 degrees Fahrenheit, for those of us isolated in the world of non-metric. Well, very nice. Any other details that you want to give us before we go into the tasting?
There is no clearing aids of any kind, like no kettle finings or anything in the tank. We just separate it to get the bulk of the yeast out, because we don't want it to be like a New England IPA. We don't want it to be that cloudy, because I like beer that you can see through. and we put it in cans because we see that in the grocery market in Norway, that's where the main consumption is, and we get the possibility to play around with some stuff. I'm very pleased with our cans. I think they look very nice. So it's different than working out a bottle, but I think we've got somewhere.
And the well, I have another question, but I'll save it until after the tasting. So here we go. Here's Steve and me tasting the Hefeweizen beer. So now we're on to the session Hefeweizen beer, and it's all about the banana.
Well, I'll say, is that a banana in your mash? Are you glad to see me? I mean, that's about bananas right there.
But not in a bad Halloween candy,
right?
Kind of bananas.
It doesn't have that Laffy Taffy thing going on. It's very sophisticated beer. And I actually get quite a bit of like grains of paradise or black pepper toward the end, which may or may not be intended, but that's what I taste.
Yeah, there's some spice going on as well. There is plenty of banana in the aroma and in the flavor, but it's not overbearing. It's not in a way that is unbalanced or would make you think it's a novelty beer in any way. I think it's very appropriate for the style.
Yeah, I do too, and I don't get a lot of clove, if any. So that's kind of nice. I'm not a huge fan of clove. But this is a really drinkable beer. And you're right. I thought that was a good observation. It's not a novelty beer at all, though it leans heavily on that, drawing out those banana flavors in the Hefeweizens. It's not as yeasty as I would have expected it to taste. Mm. And maybe that's just me. And maybe we haven't swirled up the cookie, you know.
Yeah. It's in a can, which is, this is probably the first Hefeweizen that I've actually had in a can. So maybe I'll swirl up the can here a little bit and see if we get some.
Yeah.
It's all in Norwegian, I guess, on the can, so I can't tell if it's... let's see if we get some sediment.
Well, it's not filtered. You know, it's not like a crystal vice.
No. And I'm not... It doesn't seem to be making a big difference.
Oh. Yeah, maybe. Maybe a little bit. Softened it a little bit. Get a little yeast character now.
No, this is another beer, and at 4.7% ABV, you know, in today's parlance, it's sessionable. I would drink a bunch of these,
and will,
or at least the rest of my half.
Yeah.
So very nice. I was very impressed with the aroma characteristics, especially in the nose. You know, you bring it up to your nose, and boy, there's some bananas. and I don't know. You know, I don't know how much of that is yeast and how much of that is the actual banana. But whatever, the combination works well. The question that I had is, are these canned conditions? So was there any yeast residue in the bottom, you know, that would that you could swirl up and make a difference in the flavor of the beer?
There is some residue, but it's just that heavy yeast is supposed to not flock out, but our strain flocks out more than we anticipated. But there, it's not filtered in any kind. So there is yeast there, but it's not as much as we would have expected. We'll see in the next batch if we can do some small adjustments to get a little bit up. But we haven't removed the yeast by filtration, so there is still quite a lot of yeast cells in that beer, and it's not can conditioned. We bunged the tank, and it's been naturally conditioned, like, in the tank, and then we've transferred it and canned it. So there's no added CO2 to it. It's just naturally fermented in a closed tank, so like think of it like a huge bottle, really.
Well, it's very nice, very drinkable, and as far as the mouthfeel, you know, fairly light on the mouthfeel, but still substantial enough to be satisfying. It's not like, you know, I guess I'm thinking of Franziskaner or Hefeweizen, where, you know, when you rouse the yeast up, it's, you know, it's kind of like, you know, drinking liquid bread almost.
Yeah.
You know, so it's more refreshing than that, but a very tasty beer and very enjoyable.
Yeah, and again, we wanted the focus to be on the fruity flavors and not the bready, mealy, floury kind of taste that you can get in some wheat beers, because it can be a bit too much.
Yeah, yeah. I think you would think of it, you know, you could drink a can of this, you know, while you're, you know, at the beach or enjoying the outdoors or something like that, where, you know, you don't think about... you know, drinking a refreshing can of Hefeweizen beer.
No, it can be too filling, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So you want to have something crisp, a little bit crisper than that, or that less yeasty. It can be too much bread. You don't want it to be like a dough.
Yeah. Although there are some times, you know, when you're eating a big German-style meal, you know, drinking a big slice of bread in a glass can be quite satisfying.
Yeah, of course.
It can pork. Yeah, it would counteract you know, like a nice you know, sauerkraut or something.
Yeah.
So let's move on to the Bryggerhuset India Pale Lager.
Yeah.
So talk about this beer.
Yeah, so it's It's basically to, because we have a long tradition of making lagers, we wanted to play around with it because, at least in Norway, many people think of lager as Pilsner, and just like ubiquitous beer, really. And to see, to show people that lagers can also be a little bit more entertaining and experimental. So we use our own lagers, house strain, and we've made a quite light malt base, and it's hopped with both continental and American varieties throughout, and in various stages of the brewing process, both in the kettle and as dry hopping. Yeah, we wanted just to show what, because the lager, like lagering, fermentation, and long-term lagering that we do, as well as our yeast, gives us a cleaner malt flavor, and there is no fruitiness and no yeast to stand in the way of the flavors from the malt and the hops. And we wanted to have like a truly substantial bitterness to make it stand apart from most lagers that are like more lightly hopped. At least in Norway, many lagers are quite lightly hopped, and I imagine it's over at your place as well.
Yeah, yeah. We have lots of yellow fizzy stuff. Now talk about your hop strategy. What varieties did you use? When did you use them, and such as that?
Yeah, so we used both the classic continental varieties, both Satz and Tettnang and Mittelfrü from Germany and Czech Republic. And we also used Simcoe, Cascade, and there is one more.
It'll come to you.
It'll come to me. And we was just basically spacing it throughout the process kind of equally with most of the Simcoe at the latest stage in the dry hopping. The American varieties were mainly used for their aroma in the added to the tank, and the German varieties were just added in bountiful amounts because the crops or the harvest we have to work with is from. There was a bad harvest last year, so low alpha, so lots of hops.
You got to do what you got to do.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Let's go into the tasting. This is the India Pale Lager. Okay, we're now on to the India Pale Lager, 6.5% alcohol.
This is a very nice traditional India Pale Lager. So. I started to say pale ale, but, if it's been lagered. I'm not sure that I could have told you that it was lagered, meaning it's not, it doesn't remind me of a lager beer. It reminds me of a pale ale. Hmm.
I have to differ with you there, sir. Okay. I think that this is very clean, and maybe I'm just fooling myself from reading the label, but I think that the malt base is very clean and has lager, to me, has lager characteristics. It's very, very, very clear. It's very clean, as in not fruity. I'm not getting any yeast characteristics. Yeah. It's not an American style IP whatever. Mm-hmm. It's more probably in the tradition of the original IPAs. In that there is a substantial amount of bitterness. There is some hop character. There is some hop aroma. It's not the citrusy, grapefruity,
right,
American India pale ale characteristics that we're used to. But I think it's very well done. So that's my rebuttal. But it's not that you're not wrong. I'm just different.
I see where you're at with that. It would be nice if we had a British IPA to compare it to that because this is, you're right, there's no kind of American frou-frou-ness to this at all. It's not It doesn't have giant citrus notes and all that stuff that we love so much. It's just rock solid, you know, kind of, to me, British bitters or bittery. I see what you mean. It is clean. It doesn't have those overtones, those kind of fruity overtones that you would expect.
And it certainly does. I mean, and not like the American ale yeast has fruity overtones, but I think that the English ale yeast does give some fruity esters to the beer, and I'm not getting any of that.
Yeah, I agree. And actually, once you started suggesting that to my palate, I started thinking about it, comparing it to lagers that I really like, which actually are, I really like the Bohemian Czech lagers more. I mean, I drink those fairly often. And once I started thinking about it in those terms, yes, it's very lagery in that way. Yeah, so I get what you're saying.
I enjoy it quite a bit. It apparently does have some American hops in it. But I think maybe it's because of the yeast. I think that the continental hops went out in this beer.
Well, it's a very nice beer, and it's a shame we only have one bottle of it.
We need to go to Norway.
Yeah,
it's very, very nice. I enjoy it quite a bit.
All right.
Okay, so maybe we're spoiled Americans, Gard. But you know, we're used to, you know, being slapped in the face with the American hops. You know, maybe we're jaded. But we got more out of the kind of continental hop flavor and bitterness. It was a delicious beer, and to me, it was plain that it was lagered. And I think I talked Steve into it.
Good job. Yeah, but I think you can pick it up. There is a difference. Like, I think the malt and the hops and the bitterness stands out in a different way. And the long lagering time also gives it a very nice clarity. I mean, I'm surprised every time I brew this one over how clear it gets without any form of filtration.
Yeah, it was delicious, and it was definitely a lot more hoppy than, you know, most lagers that I've had, and probably, you know, as I would imagine, the hop character, hopping level of, say, you know, like a traditional English IPA. Is that an unfair characterization?
No, I think that's close. And IBU-wise, anywhere around between 40 and 50, measured in the lab, not just calculated, because there are some differences there. Mm. I've been surprised when I get my measurements from the lab.
Yeah, if you've listened to the show for a while, you know you'll get me on my soapbox about bitterness formulas. And I'm not going to climb up on it again. Okay, just go through the archives and listen to me rant about the current state of hop calculation formulas. It would be nice to have access to a lab to, you know, to test our own batches to see where the IBU levels actually are.
The easiest way would just be from my experience and in my system, if you add 1/3. Right, when you calculate in Beersmith or any other form of calculation, add 1/3. Like if you have a calculated of 30, it's probably around 40.
Really?
Yeah, that's our experience in the 13 barrel system. But it probably has something to do with the fact that the wort stands longer in a hot environment than it does when you brew at home in a large, smaller volume. So there is something there that maybe Beersmith really doesn't account for, or I haven't set it up correctly. I know that if I add 1/3, I get very close to the actual numbers.
Interesting. And also, yeah. you probably, with your system, are able to get a more consistent, more vigorous boil than most homebrew systems as well.
Yeah, definitely. I remember from when I was homebrewing, just getting that 50-liter pot on a boil on my stovetop using all the four burners and still just barely a simmer. So that's a luxury with steam heating. It's the way to go.
So there ends part one. Thanks again to Gard and to Steve. Very tasty beers. Next time, we'll continue to be adventurous and we'll taste Gard's no malt ginger beer, ginger and citrus beer, and his coconut macaroon 2016 Christmas beer. Mmm! Those were tasty beers. I might have found inspiration for my holiday beer this year. No spoilers. As if you couldn't figure that out. If you have, until then, if you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to James at basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form at basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our support link where you can throw a couple of bucks into the tip jar by subscribing financially to our podcasts. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site. Get a free Basic Brewing bottle opener with any DVD combo. You can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in the store as well. You can find our logbooks where you can track and log up to 50 batches of beer. Check all that out at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are Fitbit Charge 2 Heart Rate Plus Fitness Wristband Blue and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutants in Manhattan Xbox One. Thanks again, everybody. And remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site. The next time you feel like Amazon shopping, we greatly appreciate your support. And don't forget, you can also join the American Homebrewers Association and subscribe to Brew Your Own Magazine through the associate links on basicbrewing.com. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.